to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
When my son was 5, I asked him one day to clean up his room. First, he became irate, and then he had a meltdown. It was clear that that was not the way to get his room cleaned by him. Was my son demonstrating the behavior of an indigo kid? So I devised another way. What's your plan for cleaning your room? I asked him. I don't know, he would say. Oh, too bad. If you don't have a plan, we're going to have to use mine. And it didn't take long before this bright boy caught on that devising his own plan was the most effective way to live with me as his mother. And it wasn't so bad for me either. On today's show, we're talking with Maureen Healy, author of The Energetic Keys to Indigo Kids, who will tell us why a lot of kids these days aren't the same kind of kid growing up even 50 years ago. There's something different about them. Welcome to Full Power Living. We're the only show on international media dedicated to the exploration and understanding of emotions and their role in human life. I'm Eileen Dillon, your show creator and host, and I encourage you to chat with us on emotionalpro.com and on blogtalkradio.com/FPL, either one. We also have a toll-free number, 888-498-0570. That's 888-498-0570. Now, Maureen Dawn Healy is a spiritual teacher, an energy worker, a counselor working with parents and children throughout the world. She specializes in helping highly sensitive and intuitive kids to thrive. She writes a popular blog on Psychology Today's website and for the PBS series This Emotional Life. She's appeared on ABC, NBC, and the CW, has written for numerous popular magazines, and can be heard on a wide variety of radio programs like this one. Her website is growinghappykids.com. Maureen Healy, welcome to Full Power Living.
Thank you for having me.
So I describe my son. You could say he's a highly sensitive kid, maybe even an intuitive kid. But what's the difference between a highly sensitive and intuitive kid and an indigo kid?
Well, I guess, you know, there's a big umbrella where I would put sensitive children under it. But what the mainstream population, what we call highly sensitive, we're talking about children who have a keen sensitivity. So their nervous system is more responsive to sensory input. So, for example, lights would be brighter to them, or sounds would be more sharp to them, and what other people may perceive as a regular sound might be way too high for them. They may be very sensitive to touch, or they may walk into a room and just know the energy of a room. Their senses are just very keen, and this causes them to be not only what I would call sensitive, but, you know, they pull the tags out of their shirts. They don't want to wear particular shoes. They don't want to eat certain foods. I mean, everyone's sensitive to a point, but highly sensitive children are highly sensitive.
Mm-hmm. But are those kinds of children also indigo children? We're talking about indigo kids today.
Right.
So maybe it would be helpful if you'd describe I was going to say atypical, no such thing. Describe mm-hmm. an indigo kid.
Well, the difference between highly sensitive and indigos is highly sensitive is solely focused on sensory input. So they're solely focused on smell, sight, sounds, integrating their senses. So their senses, parents or teachers or adults are aware that they're sensitive to input. They might need to wear sunglasses when it's not as bright out, different things. An indigo child has everything that a highly sensitive child has, but more, meaning they not only are highly sensitive, but they also have an intensity to them that's different. So they have high energy, they have this intensity, they have something, a characteristic, they seem very strong-willed or stubborn. You've probably heard, you know, certain kids say, I will not do this. But the indigo child will absolutely refuse and not do something, and they will stand on their truth, you know, their own inner wisdom, and say, I will not do that. It doesn't matter if you are the parent or the principal. If they think something's wrong, they will tell you. So indigo children are different, that they share different characteristics of this intensity, this stubbornness, this fierceness. And they also have a similar mindset, meaning there are things that they really, you know, deeply want to bring to this world or deeply feel strongly about, like the truth, things needing to be equal. And, you know, they share different characteristics. And they're also very intuitive. They're, in, you know, they have all the different intelligences that all different children have, but their primary intelligence is intuitive intelligence. So they have a very keen sixth sense or intuitive ability where they know if you're lying, they can see right through you, or they just very intuitive children as well as being just generally sensitive.
Well, remembering that these indigo kids are the adults of the future, I really appreciated reading about their connection with the truth. I have long, you know, as we've been uncovering, say, the various cover-ups that have gone on in government or religion or whatever, I've said, well, this has to happen because we're moving into a time where we will know what things are or aren't, and there won't be any point to not telling the truth. And so I liked reading that these people, these young people are the ones who are bringing this energy to us.
And the only thing I would add is that, you know, indigos have been around in a long, for a long time, but, you know, they started coming in sort of mass population in the 70s. So a lot of indigos are even adult indigos. But one of the reasons I chose the topic of indigo children is that I see them in my office more and more, and they have such an intensity to them that it can go in a very skillful, smart direction or in another direction really quickly. So learning how to help them manage that is so important. So, but from a time perspective, they've been around. I mean, I know indigos that are 50 years up, but that's more rare. It's more like they're 40 years and younger.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, as I did some research, I saw that some people said people like Buddha and Jesus were actually indigo kids, that they may have been coming in for a long time, but they're coming in droves now. And I raised three indigo kids myself, and I've had people tell me straight out such things as, I really think your child is very difficult. Why do people see indigo kids as difficult?
Well, the thing that is so remarkable about an indigo child is that their primary intelligence is intuitive intelligence. They have a wisdom within them. So they know when something is right, they know when something is wrong, they know what's truth, they know what's not truth, and they're willing to stand on their courage or their strength, their fierceness to say, like, for example, you know, it's not okay to spy on us in this country. You know, they're willing to go to bat. But people who oppose sort of the majority or sort of are what we would call different or see life differently, oftentimes for people who are very not even just mainstream, but want to do things a certain way, because indigos are highly creative, highly imaginative, and really are connected to an inner wisdom. So they do things differently. And if you want someone to do something a certain way, for you, someone who's doing it differently, they would be difficult. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Oftentimes, I have parents that call me and say, hey, my child is challenging and difficult. And then I meet with the child, and I think they're the most glorious thing ever. Of course, I'm not putting them to bed at night. But but there's a perception of how to raise children that if we don't raise them, you know, we can't, let's put it this way, we can't raise our kids the way we were raised. Because there's a different consciousness, there's a different awareness, we know more now. So if you were going to be like an authoritarian parent and said, hey, you need to go to bed because I said so, that will never work out with an indigo.
Exactly, yes. Like I said, I raised some. You speak truth. One of the things I wish that I had known about, I wish your book had been available. My son is now 36 years old, and if I had known that I needed to keep him busy with creative projects, he wouldn't have come up with so many what could only be seen as like destructive projects. Like, for example, one day he took a huge garbage can full of chicken food and spread it evenly over the entire chicken yard. And another time he spray painted black paint on the back of our house. That sort of thing. And he really was a good kid. He wasn't intending to hurt anything.
But they have this high level of energy, and I talk about in my book, The Energetic Keys to Indigo Kids, a chapter where we talk about channeling energy, which is what you're kind of talking about, that if you don't get them connected to some things creative or that it can express their energy and their emotions, that it will come out in ways that we don't expect.
Right, right. Well, you yourself are an indigo. Am I correct in that?
Yeah, you know what? It's really interesting because I do believe that we all have strands of energy. And you know, I don't necessarily think, a little bit like DNA, we're not necessarily 100% pedigree of all this or all that, but I have a very strong indigo energy in and around me, and I just naturally get that energy, and I've always been this way. So for me, this is normal, and it's funny because people with a lot of indigo energy, very sensitive, very strong-willed, very fierce in what they believe, immediately notice other people who have this energy and are sort of connected to them.
Mm-hmm. And as you also indicate in your book, it's a good idea if somebody is raising an indigo child that they find ways to help them connect with other indigo kids because it helps them.
Yeah, you know, regardless of your situation, but in particular indigo children and sensitive children, other children that fall under the sensitive umbrella, I would say that they need like-minded friends, and they also need mentors to help them be successful with their sensitivities because, you know, I mean, it's, you need someone to help guide you to say, okay, this is going to help you be successful in this world because, as we all know, sometimes it's not so sensitive.
You know, that I was interested to read that. I think I did a pretty good job of helping my kids with these aspects, but I was a therapist and I was working on understanding emotion and helping my children work with emotions. I even developed a different method of parenting in order to parent them. But when my son was 14, he was supposed to help me cut down a neighbor's tree one evening, and it wasn't a very big tree, and he just totally disappeared. And when he came home about 4 hours later, he said to me, "Mom, you know I've been telling you I need a mentor. Well, I found him tonight." And he had found an astrophysicist in our neighborhood who took him under his wing at age 14 and helped him through the teen years. He was wonderful.
That's great. Good for him.
Yeah,
smart kid.
But he knew he needed it. I didn't pick that up.
And I guess that, to add on to what you're saying, is oftentimes when we ask indigos, like, what do you need in this moment, they will know.
They absolutely do. Well, I like to, you're saying that indigo kids are here on a mission, that they are going to be breaking down institutions, if you will, and opening the doors to bring peace, more peace here on the earth. And that's what then explains their need to be both fierce and gentle or tender. Is that correct?
Yeah. I mean, certainly we all have individual purposes, and it might be, you know, something, it doesn't have to be something grand, but we all have individual purposes. And indigos, as a collective, are here to break down systems and things that just don't work, whether they're healthcare or education or even the government. They're here to break down things that aren't working and make them work for more people. So that's why they have, like you said, that fierce energy, high sensitivity, willingness to stand in what they believe is right.
Well, that's very interesting. I've got five grandchildren, and one of my granddaughters, who's now eight, at the beginning of second grade, she started having trouble with a teacher, and I went and sat in her class and realized that this teacher was actually quite manipulative of the children. He got most of the kids to go along with him, but it didn't work well for her. And she started having difficulties. We sort of intuited ourselves that we didn't want to put her in the second grade. There was only one teacher in her school for second grade. And she came home one day, and she was upset with the teacher because she said when she takes her homework in, he looks it over briefly, checks it off in his grade book, and then puts the paper on the recycle pile. And she was offended that she put so much effort, and he treated it with so little respect.
I would have felt the same way, by the way. Wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she ended up having a meltdown in which she threw stuff all around the room and wrote on every whiteboard in the room, "My teacher sucks." This is a six-year-old.
And she probably wasn't that far off the mark, but yes, not appropriate behavior.
Yeah. Well, she had, you know, she had to learn things, but she is, like you describe, a very sweet, sensitive girl. But boy, somebody that didn't treat her right, she was not going to be tolerating it.
And that's that intensity that we sort of briefly touched upon, that they have this high level of energy, and if they don't learn how to manage their energy and have it come out in ways that work for them, it can be, I mean, she didn't do something explosive in my mind, but she, I mean, it can come out in ways that aren't going to help her. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. When you have an idea, say from your own upbringing or parenting books or whatever, that children are supposed to behave a certain way, this behavior seems absolutely outrageous. I think it can probably scare parents. I remember one time my son was in, I think, fifth or sixth grade, and his teacher had told him, if I don't get back into class on time, all the students are supposed to sit down and do their work, right? Mm-hmm. Well, one day he was talking with somebody out in the courtyard, the teacher was, and the bell rang, and my son noticed that he wasn't in the room, and instead of sitting down and doing his work, he walked out and chastised the teacher, said, "The bell rang, John, you got to come in." Mm-hmm. And the teacher was really angry with him. And so when I heard...
Every indigo has done that, by the way.
Ah, okay.
I mean, I've even been in a session where the speaker said, "Oh, I'll take 2 minutes," and then I look at my watch, I go, "Oh, 2 minutes are up," and I didn't realize, I thought I was helping her, and she got really upset.
Right. Well, this teacher
got... a different perception.
Right. This teacher got angry with him, and I asked him, "How did you feel when your teacher got angry with you?" And he said, "Oh, it didn't bother me. He was just being manipulative."
Right.
So that's the kind of thing I think that can be really unnerving to adults, because our traditional view of kids is that they don't call us on stuff like that.
Well, I mean, I guess what you're touching upon, which is really important, is that you need to partner with these children. You cannot think that you have all the answers and they don't, because the reality is that they're very intelligent. Clearly, they're still developing emotional, social, mental, you know, physical, but they are incredibly intelligent, and that you need to work with them because they'll see right through you. I mean, we can't parent the way we parented 30, 40 years ago. It just won't work with these kids. And that's oftentimes what I work with parents on, is they just live in two different worlds. So as soon as you sort of understand their language and their intentions, things go a lot easier.
Yes, and that's what the point of the energetic keys to Indigo Kids is, to help you help parents and other people who are involved with Indigo Kids to understand their energy. And I want you to talk more. We have to take a break right now, but I want you to talk more about how energy can pile up and what kinds of havoc that can wreak with Indigo Kids when we come back. So I'm talking today with Maureen Healy, who's a spiritual teacher, energy worker, counselor, and the author of The Energetic Keys to Indigo Kids. You can find her on the web at growinghappykids.com. And you are listening to Full Power Living. We'll be right back. How would you parent your child if he or she were a foreign exchange student? As a host for an exchange student, you'd have five main jobs to do. Those are the same five jobs important in raising kids. People around the world have used this approach to raise kids who are self-directed, make great decisions, and are immune to peer pressure. Get your copy of The Exchange Student Model for Parenting, written by me, Eileen Dillon, now available on Kindle. As a 41-year marriage and family therapist, a single, married, step, adoptive, and grandmother, I've got a thing or two to tell you that's going to lighten your load as a parent and help you create incredible kids who will become amazing adults. Go to Kindle.com and download The Exchange Student Model for Parenting today. Welcome back to Full Power Living. I have a few announcements. This program and all of our programs is available through subscription on iTunes, so you can go there and subscribe to Full Power Living. And we also broadcast live on Thursdays, 9 to 10 a.m. Pacific time on Blog Talk Radio and EmotionalPro.com, where we have chats. And please join the chats or give us a call at 888-498-0570 because we love having you interact with us. Also, I want to thank you for helping us with our mission of raising awareness of the power and importance of human emotions. Next week, we're looking at how to make sure your teenager is prepared for adult living when I talk with Dennis Tritton and Arlen Lawrence about parenting for the launch. You may be unaware, but there is a level of crisis in the working world because young people haven't been prepared to make their own decisions or follow through on projects or in other ways to take responsibility for themselves. So especially if you've got a teen who's stepping out into the world soon, tune in for next week's show or tell your friends and family who would be interested also. Today, I'm talking with Maureen Healy, who is author of The Energetic Keys to Indigo Kids. And one of the things that's unique about you, Maureen, is that you've worked with children in the U.S., in Europe, and in Asia, and you've taught Tibetan refugee children in India also. Before the break, I was talking with you about energy and how it piles up. So I would like you to talk about energy and also if you would tell us, knowing indigo kids in different places in the world, if energy pileups happen in the same way for kids everywhere who are identified as indigo.
Yeah, I mean, indigo children and people in general, I mean, kids particularly, since we're talking about children, we're all the same everywhere. All kids are all the same everywhere. Certainly, there's cultural differences. When I work with Tibetan refugee children, you know, three-year-olds, we'd sit and have tea and we'd have dal or rice and lentils, and you can imagine a three-year-old here having a cup of tea with you, right? I mean, it's just not going to happen. So, I mean, there's cultural differences, but certainly the energy of indigo, that sensitive, strong-willed, stubborn, shared similar mindset of wanting the truth and being equal and really feeling, you know, like they're an authority or they're someone special is not unique to the U.S. But regarding energy, energy is everything, as we know, but emotions is really just energy in motion. So
right.
The thing is with these children, the indigo children, and a lot of sensitive kids in general, whether they're crystal, rainbow, whether they're highly sensitive, they have such an intensity to their energy and they have so much intelligence and so much energy that if it's not channeled, it can stay stuck within them. And when it's stuck, that can come out as depression, that can come out as, you know, all sorts of different things it can manifest as. So it's really important to keep that energy moving. So getting them immersed in creative activities, jumping on a trampoline outside, doing things to let their energy out every single day is important.
Mm-hmm. You know, this granddaughter I was telling you about really seems to respond to being one with nature.
Mm-hmm.
And my son picked that up and went and bought a cabin in the woods so that he mm-hmm. can take the family there. And it just really has made a huge difference to her. So.
And I see that with so many sensitive children, indigos and others. You know, if they're not by nature, nature really renews them, especially animals or just being out in the energy of the natural world. And part of that is being sensitive to, like, you know, lights inside and fresh air. They really want to be, they know they're part of, you know, this nature. This is good.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things you were talking about in our last segment was about partnering with your child. That was a hallmark of the system that I developed. And to me, partnering was looking at the fact that we were engaged in a mutual project of helping that child to come to the earth and get grounded here and get set up for an adult life. Now, that's a kind of an overall philosophical idea. In addition to that, what are some of the ways that parents can partner with their children?
Yeah, well, I mean, the only other flavor I would add to that would be that the idea of partnering is that, you know, we as parents and teachers and adults, we don't have all the answers. And there are times that we have to say, oh, I made a mistake, or I would have done that differently, or I'm here learning and growing just like you are. So that makes some adults uncomfortable, but it's the best way to raise these children is to realize that we are in it together, growing and evolving. Like you said, we're in this project of becoming more, whatever that means. And certainly, specifically to help them, you know, realize how to be successful on this planet and bring their unique gifts to the world. But partnering with them means, you know, instead of saying, oh, you must do this, you say, all right, give me choices, or you know, you give them choices, whether it's when you come home and, you know, opposed to saying you must do your homework, you say, okay, you do your homework now, or you can do your homework later, or you can, you know, let's agree on something. Let's come together and agree on when you'll do your homework, you know, that you can go outside now. Like, you know, you really partner with them, because the reality is you want to be happy and they want to be happy. And mm-hmm. when you don't partner with them, oftentimes the tantrum is just them saying, I'm not happy. This does not work for me, you know?
Yeah. Well, one of the ways that I partnered with my kids was to deliberately ask them to help me with my growth. For example, I was a single parent for 20 years, and my daughter got to be around 10, and I noticed that I tended to lecture. And once mm-hmm. I started to lecture, I would go on, and I could see her little eyes rolling up in her head, and she was very sweet, and she tolerated me. Mm-hmm. But I thought, this is ridiculous. I don't want to keep doing this. She's clearly, I mean, I could see it getting worse as she became a teenager. Mm-hmm. And so I talked with her about it. I told her that, and she said, oh, yeah, I see what you're doing, too. And so we worked out a set of code words. She would say the words, I get it, Mom, to indicate that she understood what I was trying to convey, mm-hmm. and that was my cue to stop talking.
Mm-hmm.
And so we started following that. And what surprised me was the first time she said, I got it, Mom, I actually was embarrassed. And it was like a three-trial change.
Mm-hmm.
Three times of doing that, and I couldn't do it anymore. It was too mm-hmm. embarrassing. Mm-hmm. Well, when I looked at it, it was like I had to accept that there was a powerful being in that 10-year-old child.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That's
hard. I had a friend, you know, I would talk to his son, really wonderful boy, and I said, well, what's the worst thing can happen? And then he looks at me and he goes, I could get the talk. So then we said to his dad, I said, you know, you give the talk. He goes, what do you mean? I go, when you get really, you think that you know the answer and that you're right and you really want to, like you said, lecture, you give the talk. So it made him aware of that, just like you're talking about. And it became something funny, like, oh, no, here's the talk. So it would sort of cut it off because we realized that, you know, the goal was so that we both grow and learn and that, like you said, that these kids are powerful, capable, intelligent beings, so we need to treat them as such. They don't have all the answers, but they certainly don't need to be lectured. Because even when we were lectured as children, it never really, there's nothing that you really got out of it that you're like, oh, I remember that.
Well, what I learned to tell myself and other parents is that what children learn from all that is how you work, not how they work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's their job, all of our jobs as children, is to learn how we work, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there are triggers for indigo kids, like not feeling respected that we talked about before with my granddaughter Amelia. What triggers can set off meltdowns, and these are very difficult for parents who don't realize they've got an indigo kid and don't realize what the triggers are, because it may seem like the reaction's coming from outer space or something.
Right. And I'll list some of the triggers. I mean, they're all in the book, The Energetic Keys to Indigo Kids. But, like, for example, dishonesty is a huge trigger. So that's a big one. I mean, and it's their perception of dishonesty. It's not whether you meant to be dishonest, but if they perceive that someone was lying to them, that would be a trigger.
Mm-hmm.
Disrespect, like you said. Authoritarian approach that we've talked about, like the just because I said so type parenting or teaching, it's not going to work out well.
Mm-hmm.
Other triggers could be even just communication, because highly sensitive kids and also indigos are sensitive to the way you say things to them, how you speak to them, the words that you choose. I find this is a very common trigger that gets triggered because adults live in a different world than kids. They oftentimes think that, you know, just go do that. It's not a big deal. or I've heard of recently, I was at a barbecue. I had to bite my tongue and leave. Someone said, "You're a crybaby. Just get over it," to the kid. And I thought, oh, it just hurt me, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So they take everything in. And it's not saying that we have to be perfect as adults, but to realize a sensitive child is very sensitive to words, and that the more aware that we can become, the better it is.
Mm-hmm.
Lack of freedom is a trigger for them. So, like, you know, if they feel like they have to do something, you sort of have to encourage them. They do very well in open-ended type schools and creative schools. Sensory overload is a trigger with highly sensitive children and also indigos. So, you know, going into the mall with all that activity, or going to a restaurant with, you know, six TVs blaring, that can be just, you know, energetic overload.
Yes.
And there's other triggers, but those are some big ones.
Yeah, that's funny. Another of my granddaughters, when she was three, you'd say something and she'd look at you and go, "Too loud."
Mm-hmm.
So now the term indigo, we've been throwing it around, but I don't think we identified that the term indigo has to do with this intuitive orientation and the intuition correlating with the sixth chakra. Will you explain that?
Sure. We have, you know, we're complex, amazing beings on this planet, and underneath our physical body is our energy body. And I do energy work myself. And I do energy work with children and parents and teach them how to do it on themselves, which is incredible and really helps them with their healing and relaxation. But we have seven main chakras, and the chakra or energy center that is correlated to intuition and, you know, intuition, really, psychic ability, is on the forehead is where it's primarily located. And the color associated with that is indigo. And Nancy Tape, who was a very well-known woman and who's now passed into spirit, was the first person in the 70s to notice that these beings and these children had this indigo-colored aura. So that was very connected to their intuitive sense. And that's where Indigo Kids, the languaging, came from. So it's children who are really stubborn, strong-willed, creative, and highly intelligent, oftentimes gifted in one area and not in another, typically don't fit into school systems, but have this keen sense of intuition and have this shared mindset, which is, you know, has a lot to do with honesty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes it pretty exacting. It's like we parents, we can't slough off. It's sort of like the Indigo Kids may not like being dictated to, but sometimes the intensity of the integrity with which Indigo Kids want to work, it seems like authoritarianism to parents sometimes, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So the entire second section of the energetic keys to Indigo Kids is about how indigo children heal.
Right.
And I think we're just beginning in our culture, unfortunately, to be conversant with healing energy. Why is there such a need for indigo kids to be healed, and how do you go about doing that?
Well, the scoop is, and this could go for highly sensitive children as well, but indigos and highly sensitive kids are sensitive. So oftentimes they are picked on. Maybe they're the kids who are bullied in school. They're sensitive, and they're different, and they're unique. So, you know, they just for the nature of being a child, they experience life and they get wounds. So, you know, the whole point of life is that, you know, we help kids early on heal from emotional upsets, other upsets, so that they can move forward and lead successful, productive, positive lives. So the whole point is not to get stuck in ignoring it, or whether it's, you know, something. They oftentimes these kids have anxiety, they have depression, they have other issues that come up. So helping them heal from those issues is essential so that they can lead these productive, positive lives they came here to lead. So I talk about energy healing in the book. So I talk about acupuncture, all different types of energy healing. And since they are so sensitive, you know, energy healing is like the language of their soul that really works for them. It's something that they really respond well to.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's really true. Now, I've been working with emotions for many years, and I totally agree with you that emotions are energy in motion. And such a big part, like when you say, well, there's anxiety and depression, when I was reading your book, I thought, well, yeah, because depression, in my learning anyway, results when we hold anger inside and it turns, you know, it brings us down. So a huge part of what's important in raising indigo kids is keep that energy moving, which is what I have learned to do with emotions. And you also say that indigo kids cannot not express their emotions. So talk about emotions in indigo kids for us.
I will. I just want to add one thing, too, that, yes, one of the key pieces of having healthy indigo and sensitive kids is every day channeling their energy. But besides that, it also, the piece that comes before emotions in my mind, mm-hmm. And I talked about this in my first book, Growing Happy Kids, is thought. These kids really need to learn how to think, how to be positive, how to affirm that they, how to build their confidence, let's put it that way, how to manage their emotions and really think well of themselves. And then they, from that, it's easier for them to feel good about themselves. But they do need to learn how to manage and manage their energy and their emotions. And what was the question? I lost it.
Talking about emotions with kids, like what do they need to know how to do? For example, I taught my children that anger, in my learning, results when you think something should happen and it doesn't, or you think it should happen and it does. And if you identify what has gotten you upset and take a look at the truth of the situation, there's no point in being angry. Or my son broke both of his arms within 3.5 weeks when he was 11 years old, and the second one he injured at school when another boy pushed him down. And so I talked with him about forgiveness because he was ready to believe that that kid had pushed him down on purpose to break his arm. And he went and offered the child forgiveness and kept the energy moving.
Yeah, I mean, what you're saying is really true. I mean, if we were going to do an ideal case scenario, we would teach children about what to think, how to feel, you know, their emotions, how to identify them, and also overlay wisdom, which is what you're doing, you know, really teaching forgiveness and other really wise things to help them lead healthy and productive lives. But from a standpoint of young kids, I think they need to learn how to identify emotions and how to manage them. So whether it's anger, you know, how do I take deep breaths and get the anger out? Like, how do I let go of these negative emotions so that I can make a clear choice and not, you know, whop the kid in my kindergarten or kick a hole in the wall? Like, how do I manage these really intense emotions? And also there should be, we talked about a list of triggers. We should have a list of antidotes. You know, when I go take a walk in nature, I feel better. When I go exercise, I feel better. When I go, you know, what is it that lifts me up versus pulls me down? So I think that it's important as a parent or a teacher, as a guide, to be very aware of the triggers, but also be aware of, okay, this really works for them. You know, when I give them the paintbrush and the paper and I put this gentle music on, the singing bowls, there, it's like they're in another world and they're fine. So helping them learn that they have a choice within them, that they can choose how I feel. It's not just life happening to them. They can choose, okay, this stinks, but I can feel better.
And in talking with kids that I've identified as indigo kids, they really do prefer to choose the direction that brings them more peace.
Absolutely. We all do. We all want to feel good, right?
Yeah. Well, I think that's important because as a parent, sometimes I'm sure you don't believe it. It seems like your kid is dedicated to meltdown all the time.
I'm laughing, but I mean, of course, right?
Well, I like to, you mentioned a child who has a rock in, actually it was the same as my granddaughter, Amelia, with her anger, where she had a rock that she put her anger in and let it just, you know, that was a way of moving
crystal,
it also.
A crystal, right?
Yes, it was a crystal. She had it in her pocket, which is really great. And I was kind of tickled. My son, when he got to be about in seventh grade, discovered crystals himself and walked around with paperback books on crystals in his back pocket for about 6 months, learning everything he could about crystals. We had crystals all over our backyard where he was charging them and cleansing them and all that. It was really great.
I'm a big believer. I use crystals with children a lot to help them calm down and to do other things, for sure.
So this raising indigo kids can also expand the repertoire of parents to...
Parenting in a whole new way, absolutely. You've got new tools, for sure.
Yeah, it's really great. Well, we're up to our second break here. We're talking about indigo kids today with Maureen Healy, who's author of The Energetic Keys to Indigo Kids. And when we come back, we're going to talk about some things that help indigo kids to be successful. So come on back. You're listening to Full Power Living.
Eileen Dillon is a certified senior life mentor with Accessing Universal Intelligence. She's available to conduct mentoring sessions with you to help you understand, change, and evolve using the advice of your own higher self. You can be anywhere in the world. Sessions are conducted through Skype. For more information about these life mentoring sessions, fees, and how to register, go to www.emotionalpro.com and click on the mentoring link at the top. Get personally tailored assistance with your toughest life questions. Visit mentoring@emotionalpro.com today.
Back here on Full Power Living with Maureen Healy, who's author of The Energetic Keys to Indigo Kids. We're talking about what appears to be a new kind of kid in the world, but we actually have had them for quite a while. But it's a child that's tuned into intuition, is highly sensitive, and can be ferocious and gentle at almost the same time, and has the job of coming and helping us transform our world. Get more information at growinghappykids.com. So, Maureen, what do indigo kids need to be able to succeed? You have several things in your book. What are some of the things that we as parents need to help our children with so that they can be successful citizens of the world and do what they came to the earth to do?
Well, I think a key piece of the puzzle is they need to learn life skills, right? So oftentimes I think adults, we just say, oh, you know, they're getting these at school or stuff like that. But they don't. They need to learn responsibility. They need to learn. I mean, I'm talking basic life skills, how to balance a checkbook, obviously not for three-year-olds. But, you know, as they grow, they need to balance their strong intuition with logic and reason. So they need to be able to be given both. And and if you're a parent or a teacher who that's not your strong point, but just consciously connect them into someone, get a mentor, get someone who can help them balance out their skills. Because indigos have a tendency to be very impulsive and to make decisions very quickly and not always balance the logic with it. So it's important that they learn how to do that, to make really smart choices. Some other things is balancing intuition with reason, I mentioned. Learning life skills, which is a huge piece of the puzzle. Seeing sensitivity as a strength. Oftentimes, depending on where they were born or how they were raised, they've been told it was a handicap, so to speak. Like, you know, but it's really a gift, and it's where their talents lie and where their genius is. So helping them really see that, yeah, maybe it takes a little more energy to manage life and to navigate this world. As we mentioned, that's not always sensitive, but it's really where their gifts are. And I mean, I'm very sensitive. I wouldn't trade it for anything. I feel blessed. And another piece of the puzzle is, I think, not only cultivating social skills, you know, because sometimes indigos want to just be with other indigos. So it's important for them to learn how to not only cooperative play, to realize they can work in solitude, but they do need to, you know, work with other people and learn how to have those social interactions. I've had parents call me and say, oh, you know, my daughter or son, they just don't want to go to the birthday party. So do I force them? Do I make them go? Do I not? I mean, I'm not big into forcing kids to do anything, but there comes a time when they need to learn how to, you know, play with others. And so really being able to teach them the value of cooperative play and making friends, it's very, very, very important. And then the last piece I would say is finding their purpose. I mean, some kids are born at 5 years old, they know I want to be a nurse, you know? Mm-hmm. Other kids, it takes much longer, and even adults, we're all sort of like figuring it out, right? So, but the point is, when you connect them, like a Michael Phelps, to something that they love, he's an indigo, and he has that intense energy and had ADD or ADHD. But when his parents began to put him in a pool, they're like, oh my gosh, look at this. So it's helping them find those skills and strengths that they're naturally good at and develop them.
So I was disconnected from the chat for a while, but we have a couple of questions on the chat.
I know, but I kept talking, so I thought that was okay.
No, that's fine. That's fine. No, I'm talking about people who are interacting with me on the chat here.
Oh, okay.
One of the questions is, what about the many now adult indigos who were raised within an authoritarian model of parenting?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. I mean, that I certainly was in that, raised within that, and I think that you need to go through a process of, it sounds a little hokey, but it's really self-parenting. It's really teaching yourself how to be in the world and what is healthy and surrounding you with other people that lift you up. I do believe the energetic keys to indigo kids, like my first book, Growing Happy Kids, even though I'm focusing on children, everything in the book is for anyone who resonates with it. You know, one of the biggest feedback I got from Growing Happy Kids was like, forget my kids, this was useful for me. So I do believe the book is helpful for adults who consider themselves indigos and want to sort of reconceptualize how they were raised and what really works with them. And even these success skills that I just briefly touched on, they are for adult indigos. They don't go away. You know, it's the same type of success that we try to impart to children that we need to do in our own lives as adults.
Yeah, that's great. I certainly felt that as I was reading your book. One other statement is that many parents tend to resort to controlling because it's all they know. Mm-hmm. How would you recommend, I mean, you say, you offer really wonderful, you know, this is a way you could say this to your indigo child, you offer that. Are there any other things that people can do so that they have more things that are positive instead of resorting to controlling?
Right. I mean, the reason I wrote the book, The Energetic Keys to Indigo Kids, is because I've just seen so, the number of children who have this indigo energy in my office has sort of skyrocketed. And I think that with adults, whether it's parents or teachers, there needs to be an awareness. I mean, you don't do something differently until you get an awareness like, oh, I'm really resorting to control. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And then you start seeking out, like, what could I do differently, whether it's parenting, whether it's partnering or other approaches that are helpful. But until you realize that you're, let me say it differently. We always parent the way we were parented unless
yes.
we take a conscious pause and say, okay, well, what really worked from that and what did not work? And if we don't take that pause, we just continue whatever cycle's in place, whether it's a fantastic one or it's one that really needs improvement. So it really takes a level of awareness, of being able to step back and say, okay, how do I want to do this? Is this really working or is this not working? Or can, even asking the question, can I do it differently?
Okay,
I don't know if that answered the question, but it's really awareness that's the first step.
Yeah, that's really great. In my lifetime, I've found that I experience the greatest success when I can be in charge of myself. And it seems to me that that's a lot of what you're offering indigo kids. You offer them, adult to child, an opportunity to see that they can get in control of themselves. You give them different perspectives or tools, but the ultimate aim is for them to be in charge of their own energy and keep it moving. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest with ourselves. We all want to think that we're going to live forever, but, you know, this is a very time-based world we live on, and what we really want to do is nurture children and raise our kids and help our kids at school, you know, figure out how do I make smart choices? How can I make them on my own? So that's the goal, is how do we help them make smart choices about their life and not take away their power, but empower them and believe in them and give them the tools that they need to manage their emotions and energy and their physical bodies and all. I mean, because they're not just sensitive to feelings. Their bodies are very sensitive. They, you know, they, the better foods they eat, the better outcomes they have. So it's, you know, a whole holistic way of really empowering them with not only knowledge, but choices.
Well, recently I've been taking a course through accessing universal intelligence to learn to communicate with my own higher self. And through that, I can communicate with the higher self of others. When we say that indigo children are intuitive, are we not saying essentially that they know how to listen to their own higher self?
When we say they're intuitive, it means that they are very connected to source energy and their higher selves naturally. And I guess my perspective is that we want to continue to nurture that connection versus sort of drum that out of them and say, oh, no, we've got the answers when we're all sort of making it up. So, you know, we want them to stay connected to their creativity, their wisdom, their higher self that you called it. And we want them to be able to bring more of them here. We want them to bring their gifts here.
Yeah, I have a site called Raise Incredible Kids, and it's my dedication through Raise Incredible Kids to help people keep their kids connected to who they are at the time that they're born. They're really incredible beings. So they're already, this was a question that I was toying around with. Do we need to encourage our indigo kids to communicate with their higher selves, or do we just support them in their intuitive and creative connections?
I mean, you're asking me. I mean, I believe that intuitive development is just as important as academic, emotional, social development. I think that, you know, you really, when you stay connected to all that you are, you're able to be your authentic true self. And that's really what anyone wants, is to be who they are and be accepted and acknowledged and rewarded. And I think that children who learn how to manage not only, you know, growing emotionally, spiritually, academically, mentally, but they really learn how to connect with their inner self, whether it's meditation, whether it's yoga, whether it's nature walks, whether it's studying, you know, wisdom teachings. I think those are important things to embed into a healthy, and I'm not saying it has to be Buddhist or it has to be Jewish. It could be any sort of connection that you feel called to do. It could be New Thought. It could be spiritual, but not religious. But I think it's important to acknowledge that there is a higher power and there is that connection, and that we can use that power for good, and kids get it.
Mm-hmm. They definitely do, and they love it, too. You know, one of the things that when I talked with my granddaughter one time, I know I went to school when my son was in seventh grade, and I talked with his teachers because he wasn't doing really well in school. Mm-hmm. And the teacher said, well, he's perfectly nice in school, but he's just not here. And to get his attention, we have to tap a pencil on the desk. And shortly thereafter, he had spring break, and he and I went on a camping trip, and I was talking with him, and it occurred to me to say, what are you doing when you're not there? And he told me that he was considering the question of how and whether he wanted to stay connected to God.
Mm-hmm.
And now his daughter, my granddaughter, also says, there are times when I'm just not there and I don't know where I go, and it causes her distress. How does one deal with that?
Well, I think there's a lot of things happening with that question. One is that we're all multidimensional beings, and the children are very multidimensional, which has to, and I can talk, that's a whole nother hour or 2 hours we can talk about. But the reality is that we need to help them manage being here on planet Earth. And that doesn't mean cutting off the ability to connect to all that there is and get questions and answers. And I mean, I took a whole semester of Latin once. I had no idea where it came from, whether it was a past life or anything. I just knew all the answers. I could just tap into it. And then the teacher said, we need you to help you. Someone else, I said, I can't. I didn't know how I got it, but I was able to tap into the answers. So children are going to other dimensions, and they're coming back into their physical body. So we need to help them manage how to be where they are, and how to help teachers and parents teach them, knowing that these kids are creative, multidimensional beings. So to help your granddaughter, I believe less angst, I would have a conversation with her that, you know, you're creative and you're imaginative in different dimensions. And if you ever feel like, oh my gosh, where was I for a second? You know, just tap your chest or get yourself grounded, get a trigger in place that says, I'm right here, right now. Oftentimes I teach kids, you know, like if you feel spaced out, you start naming things around you. Okay, this is a desk, this is a chair, I'm in my office. And that will ground all of their energy right where they are immediately. So that will help them feel safe again.
That sounds like what I did 15 years ago after 28 years of being on my own. I remarried, and for several weeks I would walk down the hallway in the morning going, I live in this house. That man is my husband. It was very funny.
Well, there is an idea that if you name it, you can claim it. So if you name it where you are, you can claim it. I am right here.
Right. Yeah, that's just wonderful. One final statement on the chat. My prime directive as a parent of twin indigos was to get out of the way when I felt the need to control. And this opened the way to partner and allow the girls to choose their own way. She's really resonating with you, I think. Well, like you said, we have another whole show about multidimensional beings, and I've really enjoyed talking with you today, Maureen. I want you to know I've already purchased multiple copies of your books.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Well, I got one for my son and daughter-in-law, for example, mm-hmm. so that they could understand my granddaughter better. And I just think the book that you've written, The Energetic Keys to Indigo Kids, is so very helpful. I hope everyone who has kids, relates to kids, has kids in their neighborhood will read it, because I think it's helpful, as you say, to both the person who's reading it for themselves and to the children that are in our world right now. And they certainly, in this world being a bit topsy-turvy, we need as much sanity and grounding as we can
mm-hmm.
get.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Thank you for being with us today, Maureen Healy, The Energetic Keys to Indigo Kids.
And they can get more information at growinghappykids.com for newsletters and free articles and stuff.
Wonderful, wonderful. Thank you for being with us today on Full Power Living.
Thank you.
Next week on Full Power Living, we're talking about parenting for the launch, about the things we need to be sure our teens are equipped with in order to successfully make the leap from our house to their own adult lives. That's January 30th, 9 a.m. Pacific time. And lots of kids are leaving home this year. Likely you know one or live with one, so join us to update your checklist for the launch. We look forward to having you with us again next week. Paul Johnston of Fresh Talk Media has been our producer. For now, I'm Eileen Dillon, your host, reminding you to pay attention not to what you want to overcome, but to what you want to become.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.